Okay, is everybody back?
Yep.
Yep.
Great. Okay, so we'll start with announcements. Does anybody have announcements? Well, I will just say one. This is, has a little bit more with the logistics of a clean network. I was at the Federation of Earth Science Information Partners meeting last week. This was the group that, well, first let me ask, if those of you not talking, could you put your phones on mute? There's a lot of background noise, papers moving and such. So I'd appreciate if you put yourself on mute if you're not speaking. I was at the Federation of Earth Science Information Partners meeting last week. This is the group that sponsored our WebExes into COP21. And it looks like they would be willing to sponsor our teleconferences on a regular basis. And what this will do is it'll give us something of a cleaner communications line, so we have a lot of static on our line now, and also the option of people to calling in through the computer or on the phone, so that those options will still exist. There'll be an automatic recording of the session, but we'll also post the slides. Anyway, I'm working on that, and if anybody has any feedback on whether that's a good or a bad idea, you can send me an email. I'd appreciate hearing about it.
Okay.
Are
I have an announcement.
Other? Okay, go
yeah.
ahead.
So this is Lynn Cherry, and I wanted to invite anyone who's in the Boston area that we're having at the Boston World Film Festival. The Belmont World Film Festival, which is this weekend. You can Google it. The Young Voices for the Planet Films will be showing on Sunday, the family program, from noon until 2. And then I want to also let people know that they are on select PBS stations now. So they were shown 50 times in San Francisco on San Francisco PBS in the last 4 months, and are going to be licensed for the next 3 years. So just keep checking your PBS to see if they're listed.
Oh, great. Actually, I guess I do have some announcements. I never know. You know, this is my first time. I didn't know what one announces. I will be participating in a New York laser program that's sponsored by the Leonardo Education and Art Forum. It's a rendezvous event. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Can you say your? You need to say your name. People
I'm sorry, Diane Burko. And it's
great.
Taking place this Sunday, January 7th, 7 o'clock. I will be, so will Noah Hutton, a film director, recently curated, I'm reading off what their press release, subjective resonance imaging, climate science, other science. Leonardo is a group of artists and scientists. It started at Yale and it's national now, and they talk periodically throughout the year all over the world. And the other person speaking is from Berkeley, Chancellor of Arts and Design. Looks like I'm the only one speaking on climate. So that's one announcement.
Well,
another one is
if you want to announce this broadly, and there's a possibility of people participating, especially if there's a possibility of people participating online or by phone, you can send an email out to the Clean Network listserv.
No, I don't think there is. I think it's just. But I also wonder if you guys are aware that there's going to be a big all-day conference this Thursday at the National Academy of Sciences, Arctic. I am going to that, and I could send you the link if you wanted to distribute it.
Okay, that'd be great.
Okay.
Okay, there are an announcement.
Hey, Tamara, it's Rebecca Anderson with me.
Rebecca, was that you?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. First, I just wanted to say I think it would be great if we use WebEx, which we use that within ACE, and it makes for a great, it's a good platform. But my announcement is that I wanted to let the Clean Network know that next Wednesday, January 20th, ACE is launching its online platform of the ACE Assembly. It's called Our Climate, Our Future. So it's an online multimedia experience to learn about climate change and solutions. And I would love help from the community in putting this out to any teacher networks, particularly middle and high school science teacher networks that you are connected to. So around the end of this week, I'll be sending an email that has like a whole package, a kit of pieces that will make it easy for you guys to share with your networks. There'll be a blurb for a newsletter or a website. There'll be some pieces you can put on social media. And so that would be super appreciated if you could share that out, because it's going to be a great digital free resource for middle and high school science teachers on climate.
Okay, great. Thanks. So I encourage you to send that out to the Clean Network list also. And you can, in that, you can tell people to distribute it more widely if you would like that to happen.
Yeah, that would be my ask. It's, you know, we call ourselves a network of networks. So if I can use the Clean Network to get out to the other networks, that would be the whole idea. That would be wonderful.
Great. Okay, good. Are there any other announcements? Okay, well, if not, we'll move on to our presentation for today. Today we have Jen Krester, Gina Fiorelli, and Shannon Bartholomew, who are going to be talking to us about youth engagement in climate change, what's next, reflecting on their experiences at COP21. Jen Krester is the Director of Programs at the Wild Center, the Natural History Museum of the Adirondack Park in northern New York State. And there she manages community-based program development, implementation, and evaluation. But her primary passion is the Adirondack Youth Climate Summit, which was also highlighted at the White House Office of Science and Technology as a model program in 2014. Gina Fiorelli is a sophomore of environmental studies at the University of Vermont. She's an intern at the Wild Center, and she was honored at the White House as a champion of change in climate education and literacy back in 2014. And Shannon Bartholomew teaches biology at Saranac Lake High School, where she also serves as an advisor for the school's environmental club. She's a core team member of the steering committee of the Adirondack Youth Climate Summit. So you can see that the connections between our three speakers today. And so with that, I will turn it over to Jen, Shannon, and Gina to talk about the youth engagement on climate change.
Thanks so much. This is Jen. Hi, everybody. Thanks for taking time out of your day today to be on the call with us. Gina, Shannon, and I wanted to share out on our experience at COP, kind of how we came to go. We had, kind of different experiences there. And then I'll also leave some time at the end for discussion around next steps with youth engagement in climate change and some time for reflection. So, but we really also wanted to share with you kind of the flavor of what it was like to be there and how absolutely incredible it was. We're going to go through the slides, and I'll try to remember to say the numbers, but if not, just let me let us know, and I can refer to it. So just we've worked with a lot of different organizations. We've had a lot of the Wild Center is a member of AZTEC, Association of Science Technology Centers, and in terms of getting us to COP and leading up to COP, we worked quite a bit with NOAA, with one of our primary partners, AZTEC. One of the events that we held, which I'll talk about, was at Universi, which is the Paris Science Center. And Shannon worked very closely with Climate Generation and participated through their educator trip to COP. So she'll be speaking from her experience with Climate Generation. So just to back up a little bit, as Mara mentioned, I work for the Wild Center. We're a science museum in upstate New York, and for the last 7 years, we've been creating convening opportunities to bring together high school and college-age youth to talk about climate change through a two-day youth climate summit. Each year, each November, we bring together about 200 students coming in from about 30 to 35 different schools. They come in teams and over the course of 2 days learn about climate science. And then through plenary sessions, we've worked very closely with the Alliance for Climate Education. They've been one of our partners on our youth summits the last 4 years, and so which has been awesome. So their assemblies are fantastic, and also providing workshops on youth leadership. And we have lots of different types of workshops, from transportation to agriculture, a lot of stuff on school farms and school gardens. We try to bring in real diverse perspectives, from Native Americans to hip-hop artists to the scientists, the community members, and business people. So we really try to provide a broad spectrum of information about climate science and climate around climate literacy, but also that opportunity for it to be very student-driven climate action plans that they take back to their schools and communities. And so, like I mentioned, this program's been going on for about 7 years, and we were recognized by the White House in 2014 as a model program, and we've been working to share that model and refine it and learn about other similar summits or convening of youth around projects in other places. So I'm going to turn it over to Gina for a minute.
Hi, everyone. This is Gina speaking, and we're now on slide 4. But really, as a result of all of this growth that we've been seeing, we've been trying to kind of share this model with other places. So as a result, we've had youth climate summits held in Vermont, in Seattle, in Boston, in Finland, in Detroit, and we're working on connecting with some other places around the country as well. And it's just been a really exciting time trying to extend this model, but also work with other places and see what prospective students have to offer around the country, around the world. So this, as I said, this growth has really been exciting for us, and we've seen awesome, just some awesome involvement, awesome connections that we've made throughout the past couple of years. So our journey to COP21 really has been an exciting one, and we just wanted to share the youth voice while we were there. It was our goal to showcase what youth were doing and what we were seeing students take on at these different youth climate summits while we were at COP21, and really represent their voices during these huge international climate negotiations. So I'm now on slide 6. Our event at the U.S. Center was our first event. We had 2 total that we were directly planning and involved in. We were involved in a lot of other things as well, but this was really our first and one of our really big events during our time in Paris. It was held at the U.S. Center, which was inside the Blue Zone at COP21. So that was really exciting. And it was a panel of, I was on the panel along with another youth representative from Detroit. Her name is Jeanette. And then the former vice chair of the IPCC, which is really exciting, John Pascal, who offered a really nice scientific and just a very awesome scientific perspective. And also the panel was moderated by Frank Neufeld from NOAA. So it was really interesting to be able to offer just the different actions and initiatives that are being taken by students involved in summits around the world, and what we hope to see and how to engage youth in a better way. And the discussion that really took place was how to better engage the youth, but what is the role of youth climate summits in engaging youth? How effective is it? How can we make it more effective? And really, how can we improve them? How can we make them more scalable? And really, what is the benefit? And what have we already seen as a result of youth climate summits? And our goal is really to inspire other people around the world to implement Youth Climate Summit in their own way, and to tailor ideas to fit students' interests, making sure that what we try to educate students with is always going to be interesting to them, so that they're more inspired to take action. So I'm now on the next slide regarding our Universe Science event, which was our second main event, and it was similar to the first event in that we were trying to highlight youth engagement, and we were really trying to highlight the Youth Climate Summit. So it was similar to that, but also had a lot going on in that we were interacting with students from around the world. We had an interactive live stream dialogue between science centers in Finland, Argentina, South Africa, and India, as well as representing what had happened at the Wild Center and Michigan Science Center for those youth climate summits. So that was really exciting. And we had a really good dialogue going there at this event. We were showcasing youth voice from around the world. So a lot of these students had the opportunity to express what they had experienced at the summit, what they loved about it, and what inspired them. We also had a panel to interact with these young students that included also Frank Leopold from NOAA at this event, Owen Gaffney, also John Postel from the IPCC, and a representative from Earth Day, from the Earth Day Network. And it was just really interesting to hear different voices on what was going on at COP21 and really in the climate education world itself around the world. And it was just really good to see the international perspective and to see what was going on around the world.
And this is Jen just jumping in that, you know, the opportunity to really connect and dialogue, live dialogue with all of these different sites worldwide and then here from the U.S. and well as this sort of incredible panel of experts, scientists, and educators really brought together really a renewed sense of hope and also the power of story. And which was really important, from my perspective, it really brought home that context of understanding climate impact in the place where it was happening. So hearing from the students in Argentina about the flooding that was happening in their communities, and what that, you know, and what that was gonna, what that meant to them, or hearing from Detroit, like the impact of, the rates of asthma and the rates of, cancer in areas that have a lot of industrial use that, rely heavily on, fossil fuels and emissions and air pollution. And so it was really powerful to hear the climate science and the impacts framed by the students in the context of place. So that was, I guess, one of the things that came out of that. And it was also really hopeful, of course, to hear those stories and to see the work that the students were doing to kind of combat those impacts. So I'm going to turn it over to Shannon now to talk about her experience with climate generation.
I wanted to add that I was able to see some of the events, and the children from South Africa, they were so young and they were so inspiring just to hear them talk about the different things that they were doing to affect change in their villages and where they live. So I just, the whole event was a lot of fun, and I had it playing in my classroom because I wasn't in Paris yet. This was during the first week. So hi, I'm Shannon, and I'm on slide 11. So I was selected along with 9 other teachers to attend the COP21 delegation with Climate Generation. And we were 10 teachers that had diverse subject groups. I mean, there was a French teacher, there was earth science teachers, there was an educational coach. So we, and then we also had an elementary, a fifth grade teacher as well with us. So we really did have a very diverse skill set coming to Climate Generation and trying to engage our youth in solutions and engage them in the conversation that was happening at COP21, because as you all know, it was all over the news, and everybody was talking about it beforehand. So the students hadn't really heard about it, and so they were interested to know what was going to be happening there. So the first picture there, just to give you a sense of how interconnected and how easy it was to run into really important people. The gentleman that are in the picture with us on slide 11, that's the president of Mozambique, and he was just walking through the flags, and we ran into him, and he was curious about our red jackets, and so we had a conversation with him about how we were educators from America, and so he took a picture with us. So it's just funny the way that you could run into people unexpectedly and not know who you were going to have a conversation with next.
Was he part of, was he somebody who was involved in the negotiations?
Yeah, absolutely. He was one of the members of the party for Moses. So moving on, the different educators, the majority of them did come from Minnesota. Climate Generation is based out of Minnesota, but they did expand to include educators from Colorado, North Carolina, Georgia, and New York State, of course, because I'm from New York State. Part of the way, I'm on slide 13, part of the way that we were connecting with our students was through a daily blog. So every day, all of the educators with Climate Generation would submit a blog talking about what we experienced for the during that day, and what types of lessons we were learning as we went through, and what we hoped our kids would take away from all of this. So every day was just a different perspective on what we ran into, and it was an interesting way to connect to them. So not only did we have the opportunity to connect daily through our blog, but we also did a video conference call with our students. And so,
slide 14.
That's a picture of the video conference that I had with the students in my school. I had a couple of my classes that I teach, as well as members of my environmental club, and also a social studies class and an English class came to talk with me and listen to all the things that I had learned while I was in Paris there. So that was a really great and interesting way to engage the kids, because they got to ask me questions about what I was seeing, and they had sent me with questions that they wanted me to ask people that I ran into as well. So a part of the Climate Generation program was to arrange conferences with us, and also before we had left, we had our students write position statements on what they felt was important regarding climate change, how did they feel like it was going to impact them in their own communities. So there was different perspectives, obviously, because we're from New York State, and then there were children, you know, kids from Minnesota and North Carolina and Georgia. So all of the students had something different to offer as to what impact they felt right now as a result of climate change, and what they were afraid of or concerned with for the future. And Climate Generation assembled all of those statements that our kids put together, and assembled them into a book. And we were given the opportunity to present our book of statements from kids around the country to Dr. Holdren at the U.S. Embassy. So we sat and had a roundtable discussion with him about what concerns our students had, how he felt about climate change and the politics as it stands in the United States, because he recognizes the difficulty he had in going through talking with the science and education policy people in the Senate, and how it was difficult to have a conversation with them about climate science, but still appreciating the fact that that doesn't make them stupid because they have to follow party lines. So it was a really interesting dialogue with him about the politics, you know, that conflict with the science, and also to hear how he's as concerned as we are. He has grandkids, and so it was a very nice conversation. And we asked if he would be able to present our kids' statements to President Obama, but we're not sure if that's actually going to happen. But hopefully, this will get a picture if he does do it for us. So next slide, 16. We also attended an NRDC event at the UNESCO building in Paris. So we were able to hear from Robert Redford and his work with the NRDC, and the three presenters that are on stage. One was a traditional tribal leader from Papua New Guinea. The other is a poet activist, Kathy Dutnow. Sidner, and then also Mina Setra, who is the Deputy Secretary General from Indonesia. And so she was one of the members of the party that was negotiating for those small island states and the indigenous peoples. So it had a lot of powerful things. And as Jen said, a lot of what we brought back from Paris is the power of the story. So these three individuals had firsthand frontline knowledge and experience with the impacts of climate change. And not only do they have that experience, but they also lack the resources to mitigate what is happening to them. So it was a very impactful and powerful event that began the opening of my eyes to the real the real critical urgency that we have for action here in the state that just seems to get caught up in the quagmire here. Not only did we get to attend events and get to talk with Dr. Holdren, but they also organized other events for us and other roundtables. So we were able to meet with a former Minnesota senator and a current state representative from Minnesota, and their efforts to enact policy within their state and in the United States. Also, the sustainability director for Best Buy, members from the youth delegation from Sustaina, Climate Reality, we talked to Dr. Kendra Lin, and a group called Pol Sutera, which they were a dynamic group of research scientists. One is a scientist who does research in the Arctic, and the other is a scientist who was doing research in the Antarctic. And they decided the way that they were going to call attention and have a call to action for this COP21 happening in Paris was that the Arctic researcher was going to run from the pole to Paris, and the Antarctic researcher was going to ride his bicycle from the Antarctic ice shelf to Paris. And they both managed to do it in good health and met a lot of people along the way. So we had a really unique opportunity to talk with the two of them and their experiences, talking to indigenous people along the oceans, also indigenous people, the Sami Indians that are having trouble with their hunting and stuff because of the loss of ice in the Arctic. So they were really cool organizations to be able to talk to, and they recorded some statements for us to take back to our students. So they were they're kind of like rock stars of the climate change movement, and the traveling that they did was really cool, and the statements that they gave us was really excellent as well. I'm going to turn it back over to Jen. Over to you.
So yeah, this is Gina speaking. I think we're on slide, I'm not sure.
It's titled Inside COP21 Space.
Yeah.
You can't see that slide number. Oh, sorry.
It's 18. So, yeah. Slide 18.
Okay, slide 18. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. So, yeah, Inside COP21 Spaces. I think it's also important to note kind of how all of this felt and how I think it was important to recognize, too, how the space was designed to have spaces so that people could meet and talk and that kind of thing. So these are just some images of inside the Blue Zone, but definitely images that help showcase what different countries were doing to help mitigate climate change and maybe some of their resiliency strategies. But definitely everywhere that you went, you saw people talking and, you know, mingling and really having conversation about what's going on. So that was really interesting to see.
Oh, I'm on a conference call right now. I'm not actually, like, I'm muted. But the climate...
No, somebody who's talking is not muted.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So outside of the Blue Zone was a climate generation space, which is open to the public. But it also was a place, even more so, that you saw a lot of discussion going on. And there is a lot of places where there are demonstrations from different groups of people happening, and different gathering spaces where there are different talks going on or panels. That was also a really interesting thing to see. And one thing that we had been looking forward to was the Climate Ribbon Project. There are two pictures at the top of the slide that show lines of ribbon. And written on those ribbons are what people love and hope to never to lose to climate change. So that's the Climate Ribbon Project. And we collected ribbons from our Youth Climate Summit in Vermont, in Seattle, Finland, and in the Adirondacks. So we brought those ribbons with us as a way to showcase the youth voice at COP21. And, of course, we hung them up there in the climate generation space along with everybody else who had written their thoughts down on the ribbons from around the world. So the next slide is also just showing some pictures of around the Labor Day space where COP21 was being held. They had some really interesting demonstrations going on and just people gathering to meet. And one of the coolest things that we saw was that in the top right, you'll see a picture of the tree-looking things. They were actually called arrowleaves, and there are these big structures that had little wind turbine-like pieces on them. They're like leaves. They look like leaves, but they actually captured quite a bit of energy that was used to supply to the conference itself. So that was really interesting to see. And then the next slide is showing some pictures of what was taking place around Paris. Everywhere that you went, you really saw signs. It was quite obvious that the city was aware of COP21 and that they had been preparing for it for a while. And the Eiffel Tower was lit up to showcase different COP21 images. Which is really cool to see. Also on this slide, there's a picture of a man standing on, it's supposed to be an iceberg, in a ski outfit, and he's saying to put ask please so that not all of our snow is lost, which is really interesting to see. So really everywhere that you went around Paris, you could tell that the conference was impacting the city.
One of the other events that we attended, that Gina and I attended, was the Conference of Youth, and so it was called COI 11, and it was in the 3 days leading up to into COP21, and it brought together about 5,000 youth from around the world to talk about climate change, and it was a really fun, energetic event. We got to go to one day of it. We weren't able to attend the whole thing, but they really really bringing that youth voice to the table. They had lots of creative spaces for people to talk. There were lots of different workshops and sort of the only way I can think about it is like almost like a think tank of youth. You just walked in there and the energy was just so palpable and really, you know, young people really caring about what was happening in the world and, like, really trying to make a difference and showcasing what young people were already thinking about, and that, you know, they're the first generation to, like, grow up living with the knowledge of climate change, and, like, they know that, and it was so strong in that space. So it was really exciting to see what was happening there and kind of the energy around that. So it's only the 11th one that's happened, but I think now it's every time they have COP, there's also COI. And they make it very accessible. It's very cheap to attend the conference or free. You know, they really practice the and the stuff that they're having. So that was really was really cool. And again, just some images from around Paris. You know, everywhere you look, there were opportunities to, again, engage in climate change, demonstrations, art installations, just showcasing what was happening. This next image, which has, it looks like flowers, is within the solution space, and I'm going to let Shannon talk about that.
All right. So the Grand Palais in Paris had been completely taken over with opportunities for discussions around solutions towards climate change. And a lot of our installations were also there to see. So one group, they made this whole wall of flowers entirely made up of plastic bottle caps. And the tree that you see there, the silver tree that you see there, was all created out of aluminum cans. So the silver leaves that are on the ground, if you pick them up, on the other side of them, you would see it was made from a Pepsi can or a Coke can or something. So they were just, you know, neat ways to recycle materials that are obviously going to be around for our foreseeable lifetime. So next slide. And also, there were demonstrations on different types of transportation. So, of course, they had the hydrogen cell fuel car, and also the even smaller smart cars that are being developed by Toyota to get people around. And the picture with all of the masks was an art installation created by a group called Mask Book. And it's an artist who is from Beijing, and she wanted to call attention to the fact that they had, you know, they have to wear those masks in order to be able to walk around the city. But they, instead of having the negative, scary of a thing, they wanted to kind of turn it into a positive light. So this whole art project, they have over 900 masks that have been decorated by different individuals, and it's an art project that's going to be continuing on for the next 2 or 3 COPs. They will be bringing pictures until the air is clean enough to breathe again in China. And I'm going to turn it back over to Jen so she can talk about our social media campaign.
So one of the things that, you know, obviously a part of this event was really, you know, it's not just one event, COP21, but there was a series of events and lots of different partners, some of whom I think are on the phone right now, that really worked together to create a massive social media campaign using the hashtag #YouthForClimate. And that hashtag, you know, that was a huge effort, and we really had it kind of concentrated from November 12th to December 12th, and lots of different events were a part of it, as well as tons of things just happening organically as the conference geared up and took place. But we ended up having close to 31 million impressions, 3,300 mentions, and 2,200 retweets. So the big picture on this was that it really showed the power of bringing together all these different organizations and government agencies and partners to work together. And quite quickly we came up with this social media campaign, and it really did have an impact. And it was, you know, it was just everywhere. And it was really exciting to see that move forward. So that was an exciting impact. And I hope, you know, as we get into talking about what happens next, that we can continue to use this and continue to keep that in the social media sphere. The other really cool thing that we worked on was with Noah, with Frank Niepel. We worked with him to create a youth climate engagement hub. So you can go on climate.gov and look under their teaching climate link. And there's a whole a bunch of showcase events, including like the Youth Climate Summit, but also lots of other really cool events and programs and initiatives and projects that have that you can look at that showcase youth engagement. So it's really a very cool hub, lots of images and links to projects that are happening around the world. It's not just in the U.S. I encourage you to go check out that site because it really has some great resources. And of course, also mentioning the teaching climate literacy piece that that Noah actually brings to the table and really bringing that forward. So we can talk more about that in as we get into the discussion. I just wanted to highlight that because it was fantastic. I'm on slide 29, the impacts and outcomes. So again, thinking about this social media piece that really brought us all together to raise our voice and our collective voice, I mentioned the Youth Climate Engagement Hub on the NOAA website. I really felt that we created and tried to create opportunities for leaders to listen to and dialogue with youth, and that was really critical. And, Shannon and I represent a small, a fraction of all the work that was done by many, many, many other organizations and groups that were there. But we felt that we could bring that to the table, and it was really humbling and incredible to be a part of that effort to make sure that that youth were included in this discussion, which, is about their future, really. Creating those opportunities to share best practices and the many different events that were held and that, we worked on this past year.
Jen, this is Frank. Sorry for dialing in late, but I just want to reinforce one. Sorry for being late. But one point that I think is really important from all the youth work that we've done before this that's critical here is that they wanted their voice lifted into this space now, as opposed to, supporting that, lifting up their voice, but it was about lifting it up and having it heard by the older generation now in the context of the decisions being made in that space. And I think that's a really important piece of the work that was done here. So I hope you guys resonate with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Frank, for jumping in. Working with the youth leaders we have here in the Adirondacks, they really are leaders now, and they want to be part of the conversation right now. And they have a lot to add, and they have a lot of ideas and opportunities. So I think, and we can. I'd love to talk more about that. Right now I'm on slide 30, and I think that part of this thinking about, thinking and reflecting over the last few weeks since we've gotten back from Paris and with our very busy fall of working on Youth Climate Summit, that the power of story, as Shannon mentioned earlier, was really incredible. And it was really highlighting and hearing the firsthand accounts from especially young people, since we were on that track of climate change happening, from the front lines of, Native people in Alaska to, a young woman who, a young girl who saw her home washed away in Typhoon Haiyan, or a young man from Zambia in Africa who had to flee his home village because of the drought. There was no more food. I mean, it was just gone. So hearing those stories firsthand really brought that home, but it also created this incredible amount of collective hope around the future, and it really, for me, it felt like a tipping point. And I'm going to just open it up to Shannon and Gina to jump in too.
I think that the collective hope that we can actually work together to accomplish this, and also
the need for urgency. Like, there needs to be a greater sense of urgency. We're so isolated in the United States. We're so protected from all of these horrific events that happen around the world. And I especially feel that about my students here in the Adirondacks, because we are very insulated here in the Adirondacks. So just the need to generate a sense of empathy and urgency here in the States, I think, is really what I brought back from the whole thing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. really, it was a very, it was just very interesting to see all the different perspectives and see that just the reality of all of this, and definitely hearing accounts from people living and experiencing some really intense tropical storms and having your livelihoods be lost. It's just very, it's a reality check, really, to see all of that. And I was really lucky to be able to experience that at COP21.
So just moving on to the last slide, number 31, kind of the next step for us here in the Adirondacks, our core team, we're thinking about finding more opportunities for intergenerational dialogue. So what we've really seen is that our young youth leaders that you see pictured there, that was at the end of our Youth Climate Summit this past November, they really have a lot to say, and they've been really working on ways that they can dialogue with our village board, with their school board, with community leaders, with churches, with scientists. I mean, it's incredible. As a result of kind of the attention that our program has gotten, we are getting all these invitations for the students to speak, and I think that there's some really great opportunities to explore this idea of intergenerational inquiry and dialogue, and how the students can be a part of it, and how we can engage that within our communities. And going hand in hand is this youth leadership piece. So growing our youth leadership program, thinking about other youth leadership pieces, programs that are out there, like ACES Action Fellows, which is a great example, and I know there are many, many other great examples of youth leadership, but bringing in that climate piece being really critical. And then actually Shannon talked about the teaching empathy in the classroom. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that's a necessary part. I mean, climate literacy is an enormous part of my curriculum from New York State, and making sure that people understand the science behind climate change, but also to kind of accelerate that urgency or the need to do something immediately in your own life. You have to show that power of that story. And how do we teach empathy to kids who don't have to worry about the drought, because the grocery store is always going to have the food that we need, or don't have to worry about their homes being melted into the sea, or, so any number of those things. So I really think that an important next step for me personally, and I'd like to see it happen in other places too, is that, teaching empathy to these students who it's so far removed from us here, creating that empathy and sense of urgency.
Another thing we've been talking about is, thinking about new partnerships. I mean, our experiences this past year showed us that as a science museum, speaking from the Wild Center's perspective, that we needed to think way outside our box on who our partners were and how we work with different organizations, and that was going to be a key to kind of reaching across the aisle, so to speak, to like find ways to find common ground and work outside the box to work on climate solutions and start talking more about resiliency and community adaptation and mitigation and making sure, again, that youth are part of that process. We are already working on new youth climate summits in other places and talking with other groups that are interested in New York City, in the Catskills, in the southern and central part of New York State. We have a commitment for a youth summit in New Zealand, interest from multiple places in Alaska, Colorado, and hopefully others. So, we definitely have our work cut out for us, but we're super excited to keep going. So that's it for us. We'd love to
had
well,
some
thank
time
you very
you
much. Thank you very much. Does anybody have questions? Well, I can jump in with one. This is Tamara. So you met a lot of interesting people there. Will, you know, so all of these things that you're planning for in the future, did you develop partnerships while you were there that will work their way into the future plans of the Wild Center and the summit?
This is Jen. I think that one of the things that was really powerful for us is not just our time at COP, but all the time leading up to it. So, you know, we worked a lot with, you know, Aztec in a much deeper way, working with Frank at NOAA, which was really incredible. Climate Generation was a new organization to me, and seeing what Shannon experienced and having the opportunity to meet Paris, I think, will lead to more opportunities. You know, we had got to connect with people in person, like, there was actually ACE was there, which was great. And so I got to meet a new person from there and one of their student action fellows based in New York City. So I think there'll be some partnerships, especially around our summit that is going to take place in New York later this year. So, yes, I mean, we definitely are going to use those partnerships and hopefully grow them.
Well, great. The other question I have is that obviously there's a lot of connections made there in terms of climate literacy and engaging with youth from around the world. Do you have any sense, and I know that the fact that the negotiations were going on there gave a venue for all of that to happen. Do you have any sense as to whether or not all those activities around the negotiations had an impact on the negotiations?
Absolutely. And we've been talking about the power of this story, but I mean, all of the demonstrations and a lot of the push from the small island nations had a significant impact on what went into the text of the document that was agreed upon. So there, all of the support that was being garnered in the green zone was reaching the blue zone, and there was a significant group of small island nations that really did a whole lot of work to make sure that 1.5 number got put into the text of the document. So that was really exciting to see the power of the people come to fruition in the actual text and not just in the preamble. Sorry, that was Shannon.
Great.
This is Frank. There's another piece to this, which I think is really important to acknowledge. The one of the things that happens when youth are present and heard in the context of these climate conversations and negotiations and prioritizations was that it shifts the way they think about this issue. If it's just adult to adult, they forget some of the long range impact priority, you know, aspects. But when the youth are all over the place, and it wasn't just, you know, the Wild Center and the stuff that NOAA was doing, I mean, there were a lot of other programs who were bringing youth in, and we connected as many as we could find that were related to the U.S., but there were others. But there's an unquantifiable, I think it's more in the spirit of the negotiations, but the fact that the youth were present really sharpens their understanding of what's at stake. And I think that's what the youth voice wanted to have. They want to be heard now for the decisions that are happening now that influence them and future generations. And that's kind of the dynamic. I don't know if we'll be able to know, but when you listen to some of the leaders and what they said at some of these events, and there's Jen, did you talk about the Education Day and the Future Generations Day at the COP?
I didn't directly. I would love for you to talk about that a little bit.
One of the things that happened this year was we had, for the first time, this is COP21, we had a Future Generations Theme Day and an Education Day. Never had one before. And if you listen to the leaders talk about what they're doing there, it was very present that the rooms filled with youth were influencing them and how they were emphasizing the importance of getting an agreement now, and what they were strengthening the agreement target. So that's the best I have. hard to quantify.
This is Kristen. Hey, this, I'm sorry to come late to this too, but I wanted to jump on that also, just from maybe not quantifying, but definitely how that message has been brought back. I was late because I was at the meeting of everyone in Minnesota that went to COP. So it was very high level, our lieutenant governor down to students from the high school that went that were there. And there was three panels that they featured that they asked to speak about their experience. And the last panel was one of our ambassadors, Becky, and then two students. And that was the message that closed out this huge event with really high-level leaders. All the commissioners from our state agencies were there. And with them saying their experience, but also very eloquently saying, tell us, you know, how we can engage with this solution and how we can be the leaders that you want us to be. And that was sort of the closeout of this whole event. So that message is being brought back, I can say, at least here to our great state after Paris as well.
This is Tamara. I would also like to add a perspective from those of us that were back here in the United States. One of the things that I felt that was really different, and I appreciate all of you that were there for the extent and effort you went to stay connected to those of us back here, because I felt more connected to this COP event than any other one that I've ever engaged with. So I just wanted to say thank you from this side.
Yeah, Jen, and this is Rebecca with ACE, and I just want to say hi and thank you for the presentation.
Hi.
I felt the same way. It was really exciting to be on that webinar that Climate Generation did during the event, and then social media was all lit up from our perspective, and it was just really cool. So I hope the momentum keeps going.
I also appreciated the blog post from Climate Generation. That was great. I mean, because that gave us a perspective not just of what you were doing, but what the negotiations were, and that's otherwise difficult to discern.
But also, Tamara, I want to thank you for the leadership you did to be able to facilitate that connection, because if we hadn't had the support of the ESIPNet Federation and the work you did to do that, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that's really powerful about what we did, you know, preparing for and enduring, was we connected a lot of things really fast that you know, if we hadn't done that, we wouldn't have had that effect. So, I mean, this was a really robust team initiative, and there's a lot of thanks going all the way around.
Yep.
We need to include you and Aaron and ESIP as well on that. So thank you.
Well, thanks. One of the things that I shared the social media kit with others here at CHERC to disseminate more widely, and not only did they really appreciate that, but they saw it as a model for other kinds of efforts that they might have here. So it's a really nice model to just leverage for other efforts. Okay, if there are no other comments, we are at the top of the hour, and I have another meeting I have to go to. So thank you, Jen, Shannon, and Gina, for your presentation. We do really appreciate all your efforts and your sharing them with us today.
Thank you so much for having us, and we'd be certainly excited to talk more with anyone else on the phone at another time. We can talk more. I mean, it's just really exciting, I think, all the energy and work, and there's so many people that are on this call right now that really helped shape and lead this effort. It was a huge collective effort, and it's really, thank you for having us on the call, and thanks to everyone who's out there that I know contributed a huge amount of work and energy to this.
Yeah. Thanks for me as well. This is Shannon.
And thank you for me as well.
Okay, great.
The three of you.
Hey, Shannon, it's great to hear your voice.
I know you too.
I miss you.
I know I miss you too.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you all.
Bye. All right.
Bye.
Oh, yeah.